Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first episode of John and Maxwell Survivor Talk. My name is John Gilpatrick. I'm here with my co-host, Maxwell Haddad. Maxwell, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, John. How are you?
I'm good. I think we had a really good episode of Survivor tonight. I'm very disappointed in the outcome, though.
Yeah, it was kind of a bummer. I don't know if you want to lead off with the spoiler of who goes home, but this person has been such a force over these first couple episodes and has brought so much entertainment value that to see them leave so early is unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the people listening at this point have probably seen the episode, and if you haven't, then you probably should go watch it and then come back and listen. No judgment there.
That's a fair assumption.
but yes, this is episode 4 of Survivor Cambodia, Second Chance, and we just said goodbye to Jeff Varner. And when you said that he was a force, he really was a force. He was a strategic force. He was an entertainment force. He's a Twitter force still. That hasn't gone away.
No, and I don't think it will.
No, I don't think so either. But
I think he's going to probably tomorrow start his campaign to get on for a third time.
I have no problem with that.
No, me neither.
On the list of all-time greatest fourth boots, he's right up there with Rob Cesternino.
Absolutely. It's not a bad place to be.
No, not at all. Not at all. And it'll be fun to see kind of where he falls in like the Survivor community after this, because I think a lot of people were really excited to see him in the mix again, and then that he got on the season was, I don't know if it was a surprise to me, but he was definitely, I think, on the bubble, and he's just been so much fun, and it's hard to fault the Angkor tribe for making the decision that they did, considering how much they've been losing, and Jeff's not exactly the strongest physical competitor. He's also now injured. He dropped a gigantic piece of, I don't know what those puzzle pieces were made out of, but he dropped it on his toe.
Maybe unnecessarily heavy.
Yeah, probably. We'll get to that for sure. But, you know, Jeff is gone. It's sad, but I get, at least I don't think they made a bad decision strategically. So there's something to take away from it.
You know, we'll get into this, but the other thing, too, is if this were a traditional season, to lose someone so entertaining so early could be a negative influence on the rest of the season. But the fact of the matter is, you have a season here with all really entertaining people who have played before. So I don't feel as if the entertainment value is suddenly going to drop because Jeff is gone.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's definitely fair. But since this is our first episode, I wanted to give our listeners sort of an introduction to who we are as people and who we are as Survivor fans. And so I'll start, and, you know, I have been watching the show since the first season. When I was in college, I missed a season or two here and there. I kind of like kept up with it casually, but didn't really tune in every week. That was around sort of like the Cook Islands, Fiji era. I got really back into it as my college career was winding down, and that was at the time that Samoa and Heroes and Villains was airing, which were two very sort of zeitgeisty seasons, if you will, you know, where it was just like seemed like Survivor had like a popular culture renaissance, and ever since then I've been like totally in. I got my wife into Survivor after we graduated from college, and so for a summer we went back through and watched every single season, which was a lot of fun, and I recommend you do sometime if you haven't, is like rewatch a season of Survivor, because you really have a totally different take on things, knowing the outcome. It can be really interesting, and it's also very funny. Like, you can appreciate things a little bit more since you don't have sort of like a anxious sort of suspenseful factor to it. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of like I've been following Survivor since the beginning. I'm a big fan. It's probably, I don't know if it's the best show on television, but it's definitely the most consistent show on television, I've told people, because 31 seasons in and you still have like really great quality stuff and a really devoted fan base, and hopefully we're going to be contributing something to the conversation. And Maxwell, what do you have to say about like when did you start watching Survivor? Have you watched it all the way through?
My experience with Survivor is kind of the opposite of yours, so I sort of have fleeting memories of watching the first season a little bit, just because you know, so many people in America were watching that first season. It was all anybody could talk about.
Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah. It was on at a time, I believe, in the summer when, back then in 2000, a lot of networks weren't programming new stuff in the summer. So it kind of just hit huge. So I remember that. But it wasn't until college, season 19, Token Teens, when I became sort of a diehard fan. Mm. I would attribute my passion towards Survivor to Stephen Fishback specifically because I really related and identified with him as sort of a nerdy Jew from New York who decided to take the risk and go out there. And I found myself identifying with his anxiety, and I appreciated his intelligence and strategic gameplay. So from then, I've watched every season, and I loved it so much, I went back and I've now seen every season many more than once. And it is fun to rewatch a season, like you said, knowing the outcome, because you definitely have a different perspective. And not having the sort of cliffhanger, edge of your seat, week to week, what's going to happen, and being able to just click play on the next one, I think does shift the narrative a little bit, at least in terms of perception. So yeah, ever since then, I've been a diehard. I post on message boards. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm sort of big into the Rob Has a Podcast community.
Yeah, same here.
Et cetera. So yeah, like you said, hopefully if we can just have a little fun talking Survivor and maybe make a small blip on this community that's really outlasted. So the, 2000 was the year of the reality television boom. When everything hit, Survivor, American Idol, and then you started getting stuff like America's Next Top Model and all these different shows. And this is about to be American Idol's last season, and America's Next Top Model just announced today that it's finishing. So Survivor is holding strong, and I feel as if it's going to continue to hold strong for many more years to come. If they can keep producing consistently enjoyable television and getting good casts like they have been, then there's no reason why they can't keep it going.
Yeah, I totally agree, and it's interesting to see a show that I feel like, you know, 31 seasons in might actually be peaking creatively, and, you know, we'll kind of get into our general impressions on the season so far a little bit later, but it's been, I think, four episodes in, it's really strong. Not just that, but you had, like, the whole vote at the end of last season was such like a radical, interesting idea, and really paid off in like a huge way. They got a great cast. There was just so much like buzz about Survivor, people talking about it that hadn't talked about it in a long time, and it seems like everybody involved feels really strongly about what they're doing, which I think is an important ingredient in creating a good product.
Yeah, over the past couple seasons, and now especially with Second Chance, it definitely feels like the production is taking risks in a way that's really paying off to sort of keep the juices flowing and sort of rejuvenate something that, you know, in lesser hands could have become stale by now. I look back just to sort of last May when the vote was happening, and those were some of the most exciting weeks of my year. It may sound silly, but I'm not a huge sports guy. I follow some sports. So that vote for me was so exciting, trying to guess what was going to happen. I had some fears about it that didn't necessarily pan out across the board because we got people like Varner and Kimmy Kappenberg back on. I thought it was kind of all just going to be the new people and the old people would be completely forgotten. So there ended up being a fairly nice mix of new and old, which has kind of become a secondary theme of the season, new versus old.
Yeah, it has. I totally agree with you, and I am a big sports fan, but the 2 weeks between the announcement of Second Chance and the revealing of the votes was just, it was wild, and there was so much like content out there, and people just like campaigning so hard, and it was so fun to keep up with, and especially some of these people that like you hadn't heard from in 14, 15 years, you know, it's like, who knew, like, I didn't know like what Kelly Wigglesworth was doing in the intervening 15 years. I didn't know what Jeff Varner and Kimmy Kappenberg, I was just like, Kimmy Kappenberg might be back on Survivor. Like, that is so weird.
To look up, I didn't remember Kimmy Kappenberg at all.
Yeah.
But you know, Kelly from season one sort of disappeared off the face of the earth. Like, supposedly she doesn't even own a TV. She's just out there doing her own thing. I give a lot of credit to all 32 of the people who were considered to sit there on live TV and be told, yes, you get to play, or no, you don't.
Yeah, that's just absolutely brutal. And it like as much fun as the whole process was, that was really hard to watch. And I felt terrible for some of those people. And I hope that some of them like are at least in the mix again. I'm sure some of them probably won't want to be,
Right. Well,
which
there's
is
no one I wanted to play more than Shane Powers.
me too. Oh my God, that I was
And I
devastated.
thought he was going to get on. I really did.
I thought he was a lock.
So that was the biggest disappointment to me. I don't know if you're that familiar or the listeners are that familiar, but he was supposed to be on Heroes versus Villains. And when Russell became such a, sort of, he hit the zeitgeist in Samoa, they cut Shane Powers to let Russell play again.
Like the
Now,
day before that
yeah.
they sent them out there.
So looking at Heroes versus Villains, maybe that was a good thing because Russell made it a fantastic season, maybe the best of the show's history. But to see Shane Powers play again is something I very much still want to happen.
I'd love to see it. I don't think we will, but
I don't
just
think
some of the things he said, but who knows?
it's him that's going to create it, not the show. I think the, Jeff Probst and Mark Burnett are going to be like, no, Shane Powers. I think Shane Powers is kind of, in some ways, dug his own grave a little bit with some of the stuff he said since not making it on.
Yeah, that might
Let's
be,
see,
but
anything could happen. I mean, who knows?
it
They
was
let Johnny Fairplay play a second time, so.
against Jeff Probst's better judgment, supposedly.
Which, we all, know what happened there.
So, do you want to talk about episode 4 of Second Chance?
Let's do it.
I think it was called What's the Beef?
What's the beef?
I was really curious about what like, because the episode titles are always quotes and kind of what that was all about.
Well, first thought was someone in the rewards challenge wins meat, and someone goes, "What's the beef? Is it? Is it?" And never mind.
That could have, I mean, they did win meat.
They did win sausages. What's the beef in this sausage? But that is
Chuck
not.
or
Yeah, is it filet? What's going on here?
but we had the beef was between, I guess, Abby and everyone. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, between Abby and everyone, and more specifically, I would say between Abby and Wu.
Yeah, between Abby and Wu and sort of Tasha was the one who said the quote, and you had a lot of Tasha and mostly Tasha, but Tasha and Savage working as a pair, trying to
Right.
placate Abby,
Which is a very
and
interesting duo.
which is what?
A very interesting duo that I would not have, expected to become sort of a team together.
Yeah, sort of like brought together by circumstance, I'd
Circumstances.
say.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're operating as a duo. They have Abby, who's like their, pocket third vote. And Abby's just popping off on people. And in that respect, episode 4 is no different than episodes 1, 2, or 3 of this season, nor is it any different than any episode of Survivor Philippines.
Well, what's so interesting about these first four episodes, if we backtrack just a little bit, is that if you really sort of break it down, every vote, everyone who's been voted off, is almost as a direct result of Abby Maria.
Oh, absolutely.
As annoying as she comes across to the other people, and as much as they vent and lament in the confessionals that she's driving them crazy, Vetus, Shireen, PG, and now Jeff Varner have all gone home because of Abby Maria.
Yeah, basically.
I don't know what kind of magic Abby is working out there, but they're all sort of falling victim to her maniacal powers.
I think it's the sort of thing where the switch came at a really advantageous time for her, and probably not like getting switched to the tribe and with the people that she got switched. But the fact that she had 2 episodes to really kind of like cause chaos and drive everyone crazy at one tribe, then she goes to another tribe and has now had 2 episodes to kind of drive everyone crazy. And you saw Tasha, like when they're having this conversation about whether to vote off Jeff or Wu, Abby is being just kind of difficult and belligerent, and Tasha like will turn her head and just roll her eyes to the camera. And it's like the I'm going to keep Abby in my pocket thing is starting to wear on everyone on this tribe. And if they don't win soon, you have to think that next week, maybe, or next time they go to tribal council, I should say, Tasha and Savage are going to look at each other like, do we want to keep strong, loyal, quiet sort of woo, or do we want to keep this other character around?
I mean, anything can happen in Survivor, but I can't help but feel as if Angkor ends up having to go to Tribal Council again before either another split or the merge, Abby's got to be the next to go.
You would think.
You would think. I'm surprised she hasn't already gone. To her credit, she has done a decent job of sort of manipulating these people into going her way, but as good of a goat as she would be to take all the way to the end, I just don't think these people can stand her. And if you want to try to win challenges, you got to stick with Wu, Savage, and Tasha. They're all much stronger competitors than Abby is, at least physically.
That's a good crew.
Yeah, the three of them together are all very strong. Have all did good in individual challenges in their season. Savage, did a fantastic job tonight. What I thought was a great, great challenge, the hero challenge they did as the reward challenge.
Yeah, it was terrific. I was really compelled by it. It was a brutal challenge, and I
Running
was.
in water is very hard.
Yeah, oh, it really is. And they had a few wide shots that really kind of showed exactly like how long a distance that was. Because when you see it from the shore, it doesn't look quite as far.
It
But
was a
when they,
schlep.
yeah, it was long, and they were wiped just on the first run out there.
Right. And they've done these sort of individual challenges before in when they've done Redemption Island and stuff like that, or in the Love Blood versus Water seasons, where they had, like, what was it, Heroes Arena or whatever they called it. But in this scenario, having a reward challenge with three tribes, but having to pick just one person to compete in it is not only exciting just to see who's going to win, but the potential complexities that could evolve from whether or not you do well for your tribe and if you then later go to tribal council or not is fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of the things I wanted to ask you about is when you have a challenge like this, and it's the first time they really did it in this context, and I hope it's not the last time, because I thought it was really fun. I tweeted at Jeff Probst after it happened. I said, I love the challenge. I'd love there to be a heroine challenge sometime and just say, throw out your strongest woman. The things that have been said about Jeff Probst and kind of loving this big macho masculine men competing against each other. Just let Kelly Wigglesworth and Kelly Wentworth and Tasha go out there and run that challenge.
They
That'd be
all do a great job because they're all strong competitors.
yeah. But anyway,
I was surprised. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
no, it's okay. I was just gonna say, I wonder if in the future anyone would ever consider kind of throwing a challenge like that.
I don't know if I would consider throwing it, but I would if everyone in the tribe was kind of like, you do it, I would almost back up and try and suggest someone else. Because if you lose, Jeremy lost, which surprised me because he's a lot younger than the other two guys,
Yeah.
and just from looking at him, far more muscular. If you lose, that could potentially turn the tribe against you. If you end up going to tribal council, or just in terms of the way they respond or treat you later on, they could, in a challenge where everyone's competing, you can kind of pick who didn't hold their own. But in this, it's Jeremy's fault. He didn't win.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
And
tough. It's got to weigh on your decision if you agree to compete or not. And I could even see it in Jeremy's face when they're all kind of looking to him that, I don't know if I want to do this. I was surprised that Joe didn't do it.
I was surprised that Joe didn't do it as well, and I think to your point, maybe Joe, as soon as they say choose your strongest guy, he just turns around and says, Terry, how about you? And it's like I don't think Terry's turning that opportunity down.
No, because he has a reputation to uphold.
Yeah, and so I think if that's the case, that was good on Joe for realizing, that come the episode or two before the merge and the episode or two right after the merge, that's Joe's really sort of weak period in the game. And if he can put somebody else out there like a Terry and say he's our tribe's hero, not me, then that's good stuff.
It is. The smartest thing Joe has done so far this season is, particularly before the swap, was sort of align himself with people who could shield him, like Jeremy, in terms of physical threats. You know, if you look at Joe, he is kind of the perfect survivor player. He's physical, he's a really smart guy, and he's not too bad at the strategy.
He's really nice too.
Yeah, he's a really genuinely nice guy, and it doesn't come off as being affected or for the cameras. When you're that good, it makes it tough to win because people can see right through you.
Yeah, like maybe once upon a time, that's the sort of like person that could have
Yeah,
done really well and won the game. But like we've moved past that. I think Malcolm kind of killed that.
he did. These players have become far more self-aware than they were in the first, half of the run of the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The hero challenges, as they called it, also had my favorite out of context inappropriate quote of the season. Did you catch it?
I don't think I did.
Jeff wrote said Dietz is big and long.
Oh yeah, I did. I don't know. Every couple episodes, Probst says these things that are so sexual. It's just like, are you doing this on purpose? Is your mind in the gutter, or are you that naive to what you're saying?
I think he knows. I don't know
He might know, and he's just having a good time with it, but.
Oh, they crack me up, and every once in a while they'll do like that challenge where you have to balance the balls on the disc, and
Yeah.
oh boy.
He has said some really funny things over the years.
Yeah, it's great. That was the best one. I don't recall any really good quotes like that so far this season, but that one just made up for the lack
I'm laughing now just thinking about it. Oh, gosh.
So, we talked about the reward slash hero challenge. Do you want to talk a little bit about the immunity challenge?
Sure, yeah. We kind of said earlier how those puzzle pieces were unnecessarily heavy. This was an intense challenge.
Yeah, it really was. And I have to say, like, I'm a little bit surprised they went. I thought the blindfold challenge was done after what happened last season, and I don't want to blame it all on Dan Foley, but he and his tribe dropped a giant platform on poor Kelly Remington's head and busted it open, and I'm not sure that she realized she was on Survivor for the rest of her time there.
I think there's a lot of things we could blame on Dan Foley.
Exactly.
The blindfold challenge clearly wasn't one of them, but that challenge was beautifully edited. There was this montage in the middle of just everyone getting hit and
Oh.
puzzle pieces falling on them. It was just perfectly done. The rhythm of it was great. I was hysterically laughing and at the same time feeling so bad for these people. At one point, there was something that fell on Spencer's foot, and
Oh, that looked terrible.
the noise he made sounded like a cat being strangled, and I was sure he broke his foot.
There are going to be some good GIFs out of that, or GIFs, right, whatever you call them, after this that challenge.
It's almost worse than sort of Dan and Will sliding down the big slides last season, where they look just like dolphins flopping about on the way down.
Like dead fish.
Yeah, like exactly, like let's slide him down.
But yeah, I think Spencer wins the Big Tom Buchanan Award for the most brutal hits taken after that challenge.
He took him in stride and he got up and kept going.
Good for him.
Yeah, in terms of that challenge, I don't know if Joe has X-ray vision or if he could see through his blindfold or if he's just as Joey Amazing as they call him, but he was just going out there finding the pieces by himself without a collar and bringing them back.
It was crazy.
I don't know how he did it. And, the other people looked like they were struggling for two of them to carry one of these pieces, and he was just like, I got it, do to do, there goes
Yeah.
that cat going back out.
And there was really like the stuff with Keith was great.
Yeah.
Is I can't hear.
Yeah.
And Cass is going hoarse screaming at him, and he's standing right there.
Terry Dietz is just standing there, like with his hand up, like, call on me, teacher, call on me. I thought for sure that tribe was going to lose.
Oh, so did I. And especially because we got a little bit And maybe this is a good transition to like the scene we got at that camp with Cass. And it was really like I loved the scene, but it was really kind of strange at first the way it started. And you have this scene of Cass, and like she's been fairly visible, but not like super prominent in the season so far. And she's talking about how she read the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And there was a lot of pictures of her doing that before the season started. And it seemed like, it was just a joke, like, oh, I'm still a Chaos Cast, but hey, look at me pretending. But it seems like she really kind of did take the lessons learned after her season to heart. And you had her talking about how she's changed and all this stuff. And the winner of the season is going to be somebody who has changed from their last time. And then she's standing there, and Kelly Wentworth comes over to her, and Cass is like, get away, go over
Yeah,
there.
it's like, what are you doing, Cass? You're doing exactly the opposite of what you were just saying.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, this is like so weird. I was like, this is the Takeo goes to tribal council scene, And then she comes over. It's like, oh, I made you a birthday present, and here's your good luck charm for today, and blah, blah, blah. They're like, oh, Cass, you're the best. And
It was really a sweet moment.
it was so neat. I loved it. And but I did think that like we got that scene, right? And then we got Cass being the caller and her team's way down. And I sort of thought like, okay, like are we going to a, I really like Cass, like she's great, she's changed, but she blew that challenge, like maybe we need to consider voting her off sort of debate in the last like third of the episode. I was kind of happy it didn't go there. Because I'd like to see this Cass around for a little while longer and see if she, at the merge, if she makes it that far, if like Chaos Cass like flips a switch and it's all hell breaks loose again.
I never would have thought she could sort of change her color, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think she, I wouldn't have thought that she would want to.
Right, and I'm impressed to a point that she is and has. She's partially right in that in order to successfully do your second chance, you need to sort of recognize what screwed you over the first time and make those adjustments. And she's doing that now. Whether or not she's going to be able to continue that on, especially if, like you said, she makes it to the merge when things get a little dicier and you have to worry more about yourself, I'm not sure she can keep her cool.
Do you want to talk a little bit about Bayon?
Yeah, sure.
So I think, I mean, we had sort of two mini storylines develop at Bayon, and one of them was, Jeremy has his immunity idol now,
Right, which
and
so suave last week.
he did a good job, and I sort of thought like it wasn't quite as smooth as Kelly Wentworth did in the first episode, I didn't think.
Just from a television perspective, wasn't quite as exciting because, since we didn't get to do this podcast earlier, just to backtrack briefly, that was like 4 or 5 minutes in the first episode when Kelly, her eyes were looking at her tribe and then back at the place where the idol was some of the most exciting Survivor I've seen in a long time.
It was so good. I was all in on that twist
And
after that sequence.
stop it. And no one noticed was fantastic.
I'm surprised because they had like the press on hand during the first 3 days of filming. I'm surprised that like there wasn't like a big gasp,
It's funny to say that because I'm sure you know who Josh Wiggler is. Writes for Parade and he's co-hosting Survivor Know-It-Alls this season. He was there during that challenge and he said it took everything in him not to cheer.
I can imagine.
because I was at home cheering and to be there, that's sort of an interesting extra element to have the press there while you're filming the first episode and they really can't react to what's going on because they don't want to ruin the integrity of the game by tipping off the players as to, who's doing what and what's going on.
So we had Jeremy and he's kind of going with Steven and saying like, oh, we got you, go look up in the trees over here and try to find the idol. We need it. We need it. We need it. It's for us. And I guess my question for you, you've already stated that you're a really big Steven Fishback fan. So am I. But I'm going to pass this one over to you. Do you think that Steven is sort of just like placating Jeremy? Is Steven interested in sharing the idol? That's not even out there.
No. I honestly, I think Steven was terrified that he was going to go first or second because he sort of has this reputation for being a manipulator and an incredible strategic player. And the fact that he's made it now farther than Cesternino has made it, I think all he's interested in is playing nice and just getting everyone to like him and not perceive him as too much of a threat until they get to the merge. You know, and see, that's the right play for him. I think we've seen in past episodes where he probably could have stepped up and helped out his tribe with puzzles because, by all accounts, he's an excellent puzzler, and he hasn't. I think he's trying to keep a relatively low profile. And I think the swap for him was ideal.
Yeah, I don't think anybody benefited more from it than Steven. You
And
know, arguably Spencer too.
that's two together who, in many ways, have similarities in their gameplay. They could end up being a formidable pair as the game progresses.
Yeah, they're natural allies, and they're on this tribe that it seems like there's kind of a little bit of fluidity in among, you know, maybe the women, because we don't really, you know, we saw a little bit from Moncopedia tonight for like the first time all season.
I was going to make the joke. I don't know what your second story at Beyond was, but mine was, oh, Monica's actually playing this season. She's
Yeah,
there.
she got voted on.
Yeah.
They didn't leave her behind.
She
But yeah, I mean,
ran a good campaign to get voted on, and then these first few episodes, she might as well have been, starring in one of the commercials, not the shows.
yeah, I was psyched to see like that Monica was in the ballot. I thought she was, you know, kind of under the radar her first time around. Very ironically, I thought she was sort of like a rough first take on Sierra.
Yeah.
And she happened to be playing with Sierra's mom. But it's sort of like a similar storyline of like, I figured this out late in the game and I did really good, but it was too late for me to really kind of make a huge dent and go to the end.
Yeah.
And that was Sierra's story. You know, Sierra had much bigger moments than Monica did. But it was very like, oh, like there's a lot of potential here. This was Parvati the first time around. I could be Parvati too. And, it was sad. I was kind of bummed that she didn't really have much to do in the first three episodes. And we saw her tonight, and she talked a lot about, I don't trust Spencer, and we need to get Spencer out. I need to make sure that the women don't go down in the numbers. And I'm curious, kind of on this point, in a few different ways, like, what do you think about Spencer on this new tribe? Like, where does he fit in? Because you saw last week he was talking with Jeremy and talking about his girlfriend and all this stuff. And it seemed like he made good inroads with Jeremy. But then at the same time, he's trying to talk to Monica about we should do this, we should do that, we should do this. And Monica's like, I totally see through this guy. So do you think that Spencer has really learned the lessons of the original Takeo tribe that, like, he needs to be a social person? Or is he sort of just like picking and choosing his spots in that respect?
I think it's a little bit tough of a call. I think he's doing a nice job trying to make connections. You know, we saw that scene last week where he had a heart-to-heart with Jeremy. He
Yeah,
does.
that was good. I thought that was great.
That was smart on his part. And to Jeremy's credit, he sort of responded well to it and didn't find it to be disingenuous.
Right.
So if Spencer is able to continue to forge his relationship with Jeremy, and then at the same time Jeremy and Steven have this thing going, then at the very least that tribe has 3 versus 3.
That's kind of what I'm wondering is we
Can't
saw Jeremy, and you know, I think by all accounts he's probably like the emotional leader of the tribe, right?
Yes.
You saw last week him talking about like, oh yeah, me and Spencer, we can hang, like he's a cool guy. And then this week you saw him with Steven and he says like, I could be his JT. And so it seems like Jeremy and Steven and Spencer could be a three, and Monica seems very keen on having it be the women and protecting Kelly Wigglesworth. So where does that sort of leave this tribe going forward?
It's tough to say. If they had gone to tribal council today, in today's episode anyways, obviously it's not today, I think either Spencer would have gotten voted out or Monica would have gone home.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is with Kelly Wigglesworth, you know, she made it to Final Tribal and only lost by one vote. Now, granted, she's been out of the limelight for a long time. She may not be on everybody's radar in terms of what she's capable of because it's been so long since she was on the air. But she is a legitimate threat. She's one of those people who was kind of built to play this game and prove that before almost anybody else did.
Yeah.
But the question is, do people recognize her as a threat, or do they just kind of let her float along because she's one of the older women out there? It's been a long time since she's played. The funny thing, though, is, you know, I say she's one of the older women out there, but even Tasha's older than she is.
Yeah, I know. She played in 2000. I think she was 21, 22 years old. So.
She was so young when she first played. But, you know, it's easy to perceive her as older just because of how long ago it was. So if that tribe goes to tribal council, it would be a much more unpredictable vote than Angkor or even Takeo.
Yeah, I think so, too. It'd be interesting to see, even though I think I'd be a nervous wreck for Steven.
I'm more nervous for Spencer than Steven. I think on Bayon, Spencer's going before Steven.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
I think if the original Bayon had gone to one of the first two tribals, Steven was the first out, no question.
I think for me, and this is just sort of personal preferences, I want Steven to do better than Spencer, because I think that there's probably, like, more on the line for Steven. I think Spencer is, like, sort of like a he's, like, in the Survivor Legends Club, like, no matter what happens this season.
Yeah, and I don't agree. And to that point – oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if he had maybe waited a few more years before playing again, some of the hype and legend status and you know, really great game he did play – against, you know, an incredibly tough competitor in Tony Vlachos might have died down, and he might have had a better shot at not being perceived as such a target immediately.
I think Kageyan is sort of like the, you know, what Micronesia was to Heroes versus Villains, Kageyan is to this season.
Right, because Kageyan's fantastic, and everyone in the top couple, you know, spots of that game, even Wu, for what he's capable of, played a really great game of Survivor.
Yeah, I think so too.
All very different games, but really games. That was a terrific cast, and it just aired, you know, 2 years ago, whatever. So everyone, their gameplay is fresh in people's minds.
Yeah, and then you compare that to a season like San Juan del Sur, which came right afterwards. But this, the like big story of that season is like, oh, nobody on this season knew how to play. And Jeff Perrops even said it himself, like, oh, we kind of screwed up when we cast this season because some of these people didn't know what they were doing. And now you see like the two people who have immunity idols are from that season. Jeremy's arguably in charge of his tribe. Kelly Wentworth, despite being kind of in the minority, I think is in a fine position in her tribe. And Keith is, you know, is kind of just Keith, but
you want to let him take far because he's like hearthy and he's warm and he's at good spirits, and then you cut him towards the end.
Yeah, that's the story of Keith and Survivor. Yeah, and
probably gonna happen again. He'll probably make like top six or five or four again. It wouldn't surprise me.
At this point, I'd be surprised if he didn't as well, just because you know, he's been on tribes. He hasn't gone to tribal council yet, and he hasn't had to get his hands dirty, and I think everyone enjoys his company, and he obviously works hard, and I think that sort of stuff is playing better in this season than it has in any in a long time. You know, you're loyal and we're good, and it is like very old school because you have a lot of these people around who want to play that game, and I think a lot of the new school players are a little gun shy.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to watch going forward. We should probably kind of wrap up the talk of this particular episode at Tribal Council again, and I'm curious, kind of, you know, we both, as we alluded to at the beginning of the episode, said that we thought Angkor made the right decision. I'm a little perplexed as to why Tasha and Savage, who by all accounts are kind of running this group, like, even took Abby's opinion into consideration, because they've, like, if they really felt strongly about Wu, they very easily could have just said, like, okay, like, Abby, you do what you want. Like, the two of us and Wu, we're the majority. We're going with him.
Yeah. I don't understand why they're, you know, placating Abby at all.
Do you think it's just a sort of thing of, like, we don't want her to make things more difficult for us when we get back from Tribal Council? Like, we just want, like, things to be peaceful?
I mean, that's logical, but at the same time, if you don't want her to make things crazy for you at camp, then just send her home.
That was my next question, is, well, why even keep her around then?
I mean, you know, Varner was hurt, which does make him a liability at challenges, but it's not as if Abby is great at challenges either. She's fine. I don't know if I'd say comparable, but close enough. The, you know, margin of skill between the two of them is almost negligible. That just send Abby home because she's annoying. Yeah. At the same time, Varner sort of dug his own grave last week when he said, I don't know what, to Wigglesworth. And then
I'm sure we'll find out soon what that was all about, but
flipped out. The fact that he didn't go home last week was a miracle, but it was almost a foregone conclusion that he was, you know, Varner has been, as we said, so entertaining, and he's been so manipulative, and he's also overplayed a little bit too early.
Oh yeah, the first episode he was just very open, and I mean, that's the stuff that we appreciate as a viewer, is kind of how blatant he is about his flopping back and forth between groups and at Tribal Council. Like, this is my second chance. Like, are we doing what we said we're doing? All that, you know, all that stuff. And we love that because it's entertaining and it stirs the pot and it's good TV. But at the first Tribal Council of a 20-person season, that is really bold stuff that, like, you have to realize is going to come back and get you at some point. And then immediately to jump back to the people that he betrayed at the first Tribal Council and vote Shireen off. And then get to this tribe and be trying to communicate to people on the other tribe after you lost. It's not as if Kelly Wigglesworth needed advice.
No.
Their tribe won.
If they had been going to Tribal Council, it would have made more sense to me why he did what he did.
Yeah, but I agree.
I do sympathize with Varner. I understand sort of what happened in that, you know, he was, you know, played so early on, and in his season he was set up really well, and then he made that dumb move.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's lit a fire under his, you know what, for, you know, 13, 14 years.
What just bit my ass?
Yeah, that was great. You know, but he probably had so much passion. And on top of that, all of these people, whether consciously or subconsciously, are aware of the fact that they were voted in by the fans. So not only are they playing for themselves, but they sort of feel like they have to live up to the expectations of us. So for Varner, he was like, I'm coming to play. I'm going to play as good as I can play. These first couple episodes, I'm going to do great confessionals. And whatever happens, happens. And as he said, and, you know, they show the little clip after the commercials where the person sent home sort of sums up their feelings. He was a good sport about it. He felt like he did what he came out there to do, and he has no hard feelings.
Yeah, that's sort of like the way you want players to go out.
Right. And maybe he'll get another chance, because I think with Twitter now, the producers and Probst are keenly aware of how people respond to the various cast members, and Varner's reception has been very strong.
Oh, yeah, I think it's been great. I mean, I think he's been the MVP of the season so far, to be perfectly honest, and that's why it's kind of sad that he's gone, because we got so much of him, and so much of it was great stuff in the first four episodes, and now that person's gone, and that voice is gone, and like you said earlier, there's still lots of really entertaining people around, but, like, who's going to fill that the void left by him as our narrator? And I'm not really sure. There's lots of potential candidates, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, it brings up one other interesting wrinkle to the discussion, and that's sort of the way the show is edited. You know, we've seen 31 seasons now of the show, and you sort of begin, if you're an active watcher and somewhat observant and a fan, you sort of see the tricks or the way that the editors craft the show. And traditionally, when you look back, the people who get the more screen time last the longest. And so the fact that Jeff Varner has had more confessionals than almost the rest of the cast combined to this point suggested that he was going to go far. So in that regard, I feel like the show pulled a fast one on us in a good way, in a way I wish they would do more, in that they were just like, look, Varner's incredibly entertaining. We're going to give him a lot of you, and it has nothing to do with his overall performance in the game.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened, and I was fooled. I really thought it was going to be Wu. I thought Jeff, his plea to his tri-mates was really strong, and I thought Wu was kind of like, oh, guys, I'll be on your team too. Like, it's cool. We're good. And Abby's like, no, we are not. You voted for me twice.
Yeah, Varner's speech to them was terrific. I turned to my fiancé and said, if he was trying to sell me the Brooklyn Bridge right now, I'd buy it from him.
Yeah, sign me up.
But ultimately, I don't think it mattered what he said. He was talking to the wall because they all recognized Wu is much more physical. We have a better chance of winning challenges with him, and that's the game we need to play right now.
All right, Maxwell, I think that we've probably talked episode 4 of Survivor Cambodia to death, and I would like to look ahead, if we can, for just a few minutes and ask you, I want to ask you about the near future and the long-term future for this season. First off, what do you think is going to happen next week?
I sort of felt this way last week, too. Once again, I'll be surprised if it's not Angkor at Tribal Council for the third time in a row. I don't know what's going on with that tribe. It's sort of like Matt Singh back in Philippines.
Yeah.
They just, you know, they're just on a downward spiral. The momentum is against them. I don't know why they haven't bothered to try and put together a shelter. So I feel like Angkor is going back to Tribal Council, and Abby Maria is finally going to go home for reasons that we sort of discussed earlier. What's your prediction for next week?
I mean, I agree that if Angkor goes to Tribal Council again, that we are going to see that result, that Abby's going to finally have her torch snuffed. For the sake of being a contrarian, I'm gonna flip the switch and say that I think maybe Bayon is gonna lose the immunity challenge. I don't think Takeo is gonna lose anything anytime soon. So let's say Bayon is gonna lose, and I think we're gonna come down to sort of like a 3-3 type split, like we discussed earlier with the men and the women, and it's gonna come down to one of them trying to woo somebody from the other side.
But not himself, because he's on a different
side. Yes, woo. They're not going to be able to actually woo. He's out of the equation for this particular tribe. But I'm going to say that maybe Steven and Jeremy get Kimmy on their side, and perhaps they can vote off Monica or Kelly Wigglesworth. I think that Monica would be the natural choice if this is the way it happens, just because she would be seen as sort of the leader of this women's alliance on the tribe.
I think that's a very possible outcome as well.
It would not surprise me if it was Kelly Wigglesworth, if they just sort of said, like, well, she's from the old Takeo and she's in the minority.
Sort of you know, throw her under the bus tonight already.
Yeah, he tried to do that. So that could be another option. But it'll be interesting if that tribe goes to tribal council. I think we'll have kind of a more strategic episode than if it's Anchor again.
Yep, I agree.
What do you think about, like, long-term? Like, who so far has really... Because we haven't talked about this at all. This is the first episode of the show. Who's really impressed you to the point that you think that they are a potential winner?
Kelly Wentworth.
Yeah.
I say that without hesitation. She was almost kind of my pick even before the season started. I don't know what it was, but I just had a really good feeling about her. You know, her game in San Juan del Sur was cut short. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that she played with her father, which sort of, I think, hindered her from being the more cutthroat, strategic Survivor player she had wanted to be.
Yeah.
I think she has done everything right that I've seen so far. We know she has an idol. And when you look at these all-star seasons where everyone is a returning player, the people who tend to do the best are women who can somewhat fly under the radar and then cut throats when necessary.
Yeah.
I think Kelly Wentworth is that person. The other possibility for me is Tasha. I could see a scenario kind of similar to Philippines with Angkor if we end up just with Tasha and Savage, where they kind of become the new Malcolm and Denise and kind of make a strong run as a duo to the end and Tasha wins.
That would be interesting.
I would not have necessarily said that prior to the season, but the way things have been going, I think Tasha has a shot. Whatever happens, I'll be surprised if it's not a woman, who wins this season.
I'm going to be a contrarian again then. if for no other reason than my preseason pick to win was Jeremy Collins. And I mean, there's been nothing that I've seen with maybe the exception of the Hero Challenge loss today, which I think could actually play in his favor long term, that makes me want to back off that choice just because I think he's been really good surrounding himself, not drowning himself, with the bigger, stronger men on the original Bayon tribe. And, you know, since the switch up, he's found the immunity idol. And I don't think anyone's looking to get rid of him right now. And I think, you know, he's the kind of player who obviously knows the game and is strategic in his thinking, but you don't look at him the same way you look at a Spencer or a Steven and you say, like, oh my gosh, Jeremy is a big strategic threat. We need to get rid of him right now. I think that the fact that we're talking about two people from San Juan del Sur, again, speaks to the idea that, like, people might have of no one knew what they were doing that season. We don't need to worry about those people. And in the end, it would not at all surprise me if either Jeremy or the other person I was going to say was Kelly Wentworth was the winner of Second Chance. So those are the two people I have my eye on the most. Lots of other potential, you know, players. It's still very early, so you never know. I mean,
there is another person who may be possible. To your point about Jeremy, I had him as my pick to win San Juan del Sur before that season aired. So if he wins this season, I would have a little redemption and validation there for that pick. And I can't disagree in that he's been playing a smart, strong game so far. You kept saying a couple of times that people have the perception that in San Juan del Sur they didn't know how to play. I don't necessarily know if that's true. I think the big hindrance for them was that they were playing with their loved ones. And yeah. The first Blood versus Water season, they were all playing for the first time in San Juan del Sur. So at least in Blood versus Water, even if the loved ones were a hindrance, which they were at some point, at least one in each pair had played before and could sort of circumnavigate the issues that being there with someone you love created. You know, in San Juan del Sur, Jeremy versus Josh there in the middle was terribly compelling, and I would have loved to see it go on much longer. But
yeah, absolutely.
I think it's interesting we both have a San Juan del Sur player as our pick to win, and either would make me pleased at the end, I think, unless something drastically changes in the next few episodes.
And something drastically changing wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, because that'll make for an exciting episode of the podcast.
It would.
So I guess that's about it. Had a really good time. Looking forward to doing this all season long. And if you're listening, leave us a comment. Let us know what you thought. We'd love to hear from you. And we'll be back next week around the same time, recapping episode 5 of Survivor Cambodia. So I'm John Gilpatrick. You can follow me on Twitter at John L. Gilpatrick.
And I'm Maxwell Haddad, and you can follow me on Twitter at Cinemaxwell.
Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.